Glad that you're here with us today. Good morning, friends. Good morning. Oh, that was kind of weak. Everybody's like sleepy today, right? You had a nice, beautiful day yesterday, and then we're back to winter today. So good morning, church. Okay, there we go. That's a well-caffeinated good morning right there. So I'm Pastor Chris. This is your first time with us, or first time in a long time. If you're worshiping online from wherever you are, we are glad that you're here. I'm glad that you're here. And we're going to dive into God's word today. And I believe that, like I said in the prayer, like we show up to God, like it's not like, you know, all of a sudden this is like the magical place, but that God is with us wherever we go. And I pray that the word speaks to you today. I know that as I was preparing this message, praying about it, just getting ready, that the Lord spoke to me. So I pray that he speaks to you. And it's interesting that we're ending this series, the book of Job, today. And if you're catching this at the end of the series, it's like the end of the movie. That's totally okay, because the whole book in the Bible that you can read and catch up, or also listen to messages online to kind of take you there with that. But we're finishing this today. You might be sad, you might be happy, whatever you might be. I'm glad that you're here. But someone that was doing our little Bible reading plan that we did for the book of Job, and we kind of had like different chapters to read, a couple questions along the lines of that. They read ahead to the end, which is totally okay because, you know, it's a book of the Bible, you can do that. And someone who had read the end of the book of Job told me this week. They said, "I got to the end and God is a lot like a politician." And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm like, that's a loaded question these days, right? You're like, okay, what do you mean by that? And the person said, well, he never really answers Job's questions. Think about that. He never really answers Job's questions. And so we're ending this series on Job, and really the gist of it is that Job is the story of a guy who does everything right, but so much goes wrong. That who chooses the right path is a man of integrity, is a man who worships, and everything happens to him in his life to a point that he loses everything. And I don't know if you've been in that place before or felt like it, but that Job was there. And the book of Job really brings up a lot of big questions. When things go wrong in our world and in our lives, questions that we ask of God concerning suffering and his control and his justice. And over the last few weeks, we've talked about some of those things, about what is God doing. And so today we're getting to the very end of the book. And so the story, just really short summary. Job is this awesome person. He basically has everything. God has blessed him with so many things, but then we're taken to this heavenly realm where God is having a holy meeting with his angels, and guess who busts in? The adversary, the Hasatan, the Satan, who's kind of wandering around and kind of busts in the meeting, and God asks him what he's up to, and God starts talking about how Job is just this awesome, righteous man, and the adversary challenges him and says, well, I don't think he'd be that way. I don't think he would follow you, God, if he's only doing that because of the things that he gets. So a little challenge goes on, and God allows the Hasatan, the adversary, the Satan, to basically take things away from Job, to cause destruction to his life, to his family. And so in the midst of that, Job really has no idea of what's going on, by the way. He has no idea what's going on in the heavenly realm. And so he loses everything. And then he has these three friends. These three friends that sit with him for a period of time and grieve with him and mourn with him because he's basically lost like his family, all his property. He soars. He's like, his body's like falling apart. I don't know if you feel that way, but he's like lost everything. And then these friends sit with him for a period of time, and then they start going into answering questions. They started trying to explain why Job is the way he is. And that's kind of a big part of the story, is that sometimes we try to explain things for God that are absolutely, positively wrong. And that's what the friends do. They kind of say, well, Job, you must have done something wrong. That's why God's doing this to you. That you know, justice is being served because you're God's getting revenge on you. And none of that is right, because it comes to the end of the story where Job finally, instead of taking it to his friends, goes to God to bring his case, to his anger, his frustration. And last week we shared how Job goes directly to God and starts talking to God about his feelings and about what's going on. And he's totally honest, and that we can be honest with God too. That we don't have to be afraid of God, that God's going to strike us down with a lightning bolt. Like, no, there's books in the Bible, Lamentations, the Psalms, that have people that go directly to God and just share honestly with what they're feeling to God. And Job does that. And so Job does that. And last week we talked about how Job shares his feelings, and he's kind of like Job and God are facing off. But we realize that then there's another chapter here that as the book and our series ends, God finally speaks back to Job. God finally answers Job. And wouldn't that be great to face-to-face conversation? I don't know if that would be great or not. But you know, Job finally gets answers to his questions. But the thing is, the person that had read the book of Job and finished the book of Job and came to me and said, God is like a politician, I do have to say that he's not entirely wrong. He's not entirely wrong. That from the very beginning, Job's question is why? Why are these bad things happening to me? And finally, when God answers him, he doesn't answer that question. Instead, I think God answers a better question. He answers the question, what? What? Instead of why do bad things happen, we get a question, what does God do about bad things? That's really the question that God answers here. Instead of why do bad things happen, he answers the question, What does God do in the midst of bad things? And God's answer to Job, it really spans like four chapters here. I'm not going to read the whole thing together here. That would take a while. But let me give you kind of what I call, if you're back from like the 80s or 90s, we call this like the Cliff Notes version. If you're like Gen Z, this, or Gen Alpha, this is the AI version of the story. So we have to start saying those things, meaning it's the condensed. So Job chapter 38, verses 1 to 3. Then the Lord spoke to Job out of the whirlwind. I want you to underline that if you're taking notes. Spoke to Job out of the whirlwind. He said, who is this that obscures my plans and with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I'll question you and you shall answer me. And you know what follows there? God gives this whole sweeping account of creation and the cosmos, the entire universe and world and all the creatures in it. And God reminds Job and asks the question, were you there when all this happened? Did you do this, Job? Are you in charge of the stars and the moon and the seas and the land? Like, did you do this? He kind of reminds Job that Job is not God. Job is not God. So I think sometimes we need a little reminder of that too. Would you agree? Like, we need to be reminded that we are not God. Others need to be reminded that they are not God. That there's a sense that God is putting a little order here to say, like, Job, like, you know, you are a person here. And then he goes on and says in verses 4 to 5, he says, well, where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? Like, it's kind of, God's being a little humorous there, right? He goes on in verses 16 to 18. God says, have you journeyed to the springs of the sea or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been shown to you, Job? Have you seen the gates of the deepest darkness? Have you comprehended the vast expanses of the earth? Tell me if you know all this. And this goes on and on, and God goes into this monologue here. And he says Job, you have questions, but I want you to remember this, that you weren't there when all this happened, when God created the world. Basically to say that, Job, you don't see what I see. You don't know what I know. Telling Job that, Job, if you think that you could have made the world a better way, then you need to tell me that. If you think you could have done this better, of course, Job can't. And then in the end, he recognizes that he doesn't know. Job recognizes he doesn't know these things, that his knowledge is very limited to only the things he can see in front of him. And then when we get to chapter 42, Job says this, starting in verses 2 to 3. Job says, I know that you can do all things. No purpose of yours can be thwarted. You asked, who is this that obscures my plans without knowledge? Going back to the question, that rhetorical question God had asked. Surely I spoke of things I did not understand, things too wonderful for me to know. And so in the end here, Job sort of relents. He stops questioning. He decides to trust that God knows what he's doing and knows a whole lot more of the story than he does. And the thing is, sometimes we get to the end here, people get to the end and we conclude, well, then we just need to, the summary of the story is that like God is just beyond us, right? God is just bigger than us. God is beyond. We can't know. We can't understand. We just have to trust. And that's partly true, but the part of the book of Job is that God has perspective we don't have. God has perspective of even suffering that we don't have. But I don't think that is the total message, the main message of the book of Job. Because if you leave it just as God's a mystery, we can't figure out God, God's just going to do what God's going to do, I think you miss out on what is the most important and the most powerful part of the book. And it's what gives us the most hope. See, while God never really answers the why, the question of why, he does offer an answer. He doesn't explain why, but he does answer, what does God do in the midst of suffering? Well, the first thing we see from what God says is that God speaks from the whirlwind. Going back to that, several times in the story, in Job 38, verse 1, and Job chapter 40, verse 6, we see these words, then the Lord answered Job from the whirlwind. Then the Lord answered Job from the whirlwind. That might be something good for you to write on a little card and put it in your phone and keep it somewhere. Then the Lord answered Job from the whirlwind. See, the whirlwind in ancient times was a symbol. Was a symbol of evil and chaos in the world. So it's literally reminding us that God is not outside or above or below the whirlwind, the chaos, the destruction. He's in the midst of it. He's in the middle of it. He's alongside and with. And when Job literally finds himself in the season of the whirlwind, God is right there, and guess what he's doing? He's speaking. See, one of the things that Job laments over and over is that he feels alone. He feels abandoned by God. You know, there's a theme in Scripture, and I think also for us, that suffering makes us feel all alone and abandoned. And whether that's wrestling with an addiction or a physical ailment or an estrangement or something, that those things that we encounter in life, it can make us feel alone. And I have to say this, friends, even Jesus felt that way. Jesus, the fully human person, you know, fully God and fully human himself. Jesus, when he was on the cross, he said these words in Matthew chapter 27, verse 46. He said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Okay, well, if Jesus wrestled with that and felt alone in his pain and his suffering, you know, that we also can encounter that too. And when we're in pain, I think we're the most vulnerable to believe, though, that we're isolated or alone. You know, and you know this. You know, I also believe that the evil one, the adversary, the Hasatan, wants us to feel alone and to stay alone in our pain. Instead of reaching out, instead of going out, you've been there, right? You're like, things are just falling apart. What do you want to do? I just want to go to my closet and hide and just cover myself. I don't want to be around anybody, do anything. I think that's what the adversary wants to do, is to isolate us in our pain. And you know what happens there? It gets worse. You're like, that, whatever that drug of choice is, like, you go to it again, right? Those thoughts that just keep compounding, the depression, the anxiety, like, it just focuses more and more on the Hasatan. It's like, yes, that's amazing, right? The lies, to think over and over, nobody cares or understands, you know. That lie that, people are just too busy, I can't reach out to him or her, I don't want to bother them, you know, it's embarrassing, this thing I'm going through, you know, just to keep it in, to isolate. The enemy wants suffering to isolate and suffocate you. But when God speaks from the whirlwind, God shatters the lie that you are alone. He shatters that. See, the whirlwind is the place to listen. The whirlwind is the place to listen, to know that God speaks there because he is present there with you in the whirlwind. He's there. Even though we ask why, friends, you know, the truth is no answer will ever suffice or satisfy us. Even if God, I think, you know, God's a lot smarter than we are, right? Like, even if he would have, like, provided an answer like, Job, this is why and this is the reason, Job probably never would have been satisfied. And I think the same thing with us, too. What Job needed was presence. Job needed to know that he was not alone in his suffering and his pain in the whirlwind. God reminds Job that he's present with him. And he wanted him to listen. To listen. That's the place God speaks from the whirlwind. What does God do in the midst of suffering? He speaks in the whirlwind. He speaks, but not just that. The other thing that God does in the midst of suffering and pain, God limits it. God limits suffering. You know, when you look around at the world, it's easy to believe that everything is chaos, right? It just feels like more and more there's just chaos. It looked that way to Job, you know, but God reminds Job that suffering is real, but it's limited. It's real, but it's limited. Bad things cannot take over life. That God limits the power of suffering and what it's able to do in this life. We go to Job chapter 38, starting in verse 8. We hear this. Who shut up the sea behind doors when it burst forth from the womb? This is God speaking. When I made the clouds its garment and wrapped it in thick darkness, when I fixed limits for it and set its doors and bars in place, when I said, this far you may come and no farther. Here is where your proud waves halt. So in the Bible, by the way, whenever you see sea or waters, that's another symbol. It's a symbol of chaos. The unpredictability of life, the suffering of the world. You know this, you ever booked a beach vacation, right? You book it like months and months out, and then you go, and that week is the week of the tropical storm, right? And you go, and it's always that time, right? You booked this, like you paid money for it, you booked it, and it's like, whoosh, and you're like inside like playing Scrabble, right, for the rest of the week. Like the unpredictability of life, that's the water, sea, is a symbol of that unpredictability and chaos. And just like we look at the ocean and how it's so vast and it can't be controlled, it's so chaotic. So a lot of people look at the world and we see vast and uncontrolled suffering that seems to be expanding. But what does God say here? Here, God shows the chaos is contained. The chaos is contained. He's got it under control. It's a part of the world, but it's not all of it, friends. It's a part of it, but not all of it. And in fact, maybe you could believe this, that chaos is always surrounded by good things. Chaos, even in the midst of chaos, there's always surrounded by good things. Another way of saying this is that suffering may be a part of your story, but it's not the whole story. Suffering may be a part of your story right now or in the past or sometime in the future, but it's not your whole story. That even in the midst of tragedy and suffering, that there are still moments of gratitude and beauty, just like the ocean. That we can look around, it's the same thing for us, that we can begin to think everything in life is bad. And maybe you're in a season of that way, that everything just seems to be bad, but even in the middle of it, pay attention, because there are always good things relentlessly present. You know, while we grieve, you're a season of grief, there are still moments that make you laugh, and that's good. And that's okay. Maybe, you know, you had an awful day at work and you go home and, you know, there's your spouse or your family, or for me, it's my cat, right? Maybe you have a cat or a little puppy, right? And you're like, okay, there's the good thing of the day. You know, Mr. Rogers has this famous quote, good old Mr. Rogers. He said even, you know, when he was a boy and he would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, look for the helpers. You'll always find people who are helping. See, it's not all of it. Part of the story, but not all of the story. You begin to notice the things that are working for you, that are working for us, that suffering is real, but it's not the whole story. There are people that are alongside and with. There are people that God has put in your life. There are people that God has surrounded you with. God is providing and giving you glimpses. And so God says that to the waves. For you may come no further. This is where your proud waves haul. It's part of the story. It's real. Suffering is real, but it's limited. It's not everything. And then the last thing I think that God shows, what he's doing in the midst of suffering, I think he reminds us that God's way wins. God's way always wins. You know, you get to the end of the book, by the way, it seems almost too good to be true, Job chapter 42. We read this verse a couple weeks ago, but we'll read it again here. You know, after Job had prayed for his friends, you might underline that piece, we'll get to that in a minute too, the Lord restored his fortunes and gave him twice as much as he had had before. And then it goes on to say that he got his crops back, he got more kids, he gets his land back. It's kind of like the Bible's version of the happily ever after. But I don't think it's trying to be like a fairy tale, though. I think it's actually pointing to the promise that God makes. First is that the adversary's attacks are real, and loss and pain and suffering are real. And the thing is that you know, we may have people, and we may at the same time also mess up, say the wrong things, and be totally wrong overall, just like Job's friends. Yet Job tells us that God makes promise here. God makes a promise to cling to the promise that God's way in this life and the next always wins. It always wins. On this side of heaven, to be reminded, the adversary does not win this. The adversary does not win the argument, does not win the case against Job, because Job remains faithful to God even in the midst of his suffering. He doesn't give up or turn his back on God. That the bet is off, friends. That the adversary walks away defeated. And that is the part of the story to remember. And that's where Jesus comes in. See, it comes into the story that Jesus was not just a guy that lived and taught to say he's a good teacher and prophet that way. But the power of Jesus, and we're about to celebrate this as we enter into the season of Lent in the next few weeks. But the power of is Jesus died and was resurrected and he defeated death. And he gifted life. He offers life to each and every one of us to begin now that extends into eternity, eternal life. And friends, that we are promised by God, the loss, the fatigue, the pain, the suffering ends. And that's the moral of the story, is that we are restored. For Job, it happened in this life. So for some of us, it happens in the next. But his way always wins, here and now, as hard as it is, and it stretches into eternity. God's way wins. God's way wins. You know, some of us have discovered that the hard way. We've gone off on our own way, gotten in big trouble for going off on our own way, right? We realize, oh, I need to get back on track. You know, God's way always wins. It comes around, and it meets us there. But God's way wins in the end, too. His promise to us. And so summing up the book of Job here, you know, like Job and his friends, we always tend to ask the question, why? But the truth is, you know what? You and I, we're not going to ever be satisfied with any answer. And some of us, some people you know, have given up on God because of that, because of the lack of answers in that way. But that doesn't change the evil and the adversary's work in this world when we give up on God. However, God does show what he's doing and what he calls us and where he calls us to respond. That he is speaking in the whirlwind. He limits the power of suffering and evil, and he eventually defeats it. And I think all of this, I think it provides us with what we need even more than answers. Provides us with hope. Hope. I think what we need in our suffering the most is not answers, but it's hope. It's hope. Because today, you know, today I don't know where you are, what you're facing, what you're dealing with, what you're struggling with, what's the source of your confusion, where you're stepping back or stepping up. You know, but I do hope that Job provides that hope for you. We need not answers, but hope. That we need answers at some points, that we need to seek those answers and not give up. Just like Job going to God, we need to go to God and ask God and speak to God. But we can't be settled there, because I think the biggest thing is the hope that only God can provide for us. And so we're at the end of the message here, friends. And usually at the end of messages, we kind of, you know, we have a pattern of worship here, by the way. And part of the pattern is that usually I end by praying and then we go to the table. But today we're going to do something a little bit different. Instead of me praying for you, I'm going to invite you to come forward to pray. Come forward to pray. We're going to take a little bit of time for that. And so I'll ask the musicians if you guys want to come back to the platform here. They're going to be playing what I think is one of a very powerful song that I've heard at various points in my ministry in different places and situations with some very powerful words to it. And so as our worship team plays this song and sings, what I'd like you to do is to listen. To listen. That in the whirlwind, we're told that God speaks. And there's a verse in the book of Job where Job, he says, I'm going to speak no more, God. I'm going to cover my mouth. And instead of keeping to speak, to spill all these more questions and things, Job says, I'm going to cover my mouth. And instead, I'm going to listen. I'm going to listen to you. And friends, I think sometimes we forget that part of prayer. That even when we're praying people, we pray and we say, God, give me this. You know, I need help with that. I need that. Like, but prayer is just as much listening as it is speaking. And sometimes we need to do that, to take some time, to take a pause, and to just listen to what God may be saying to you. And so what we're going to do is these prayer altars here, they're for you. For our camera folks, if you can just zoom in on the band, so that way you don't have to worry about being on a screen somewhere in some place that you don't know, but that it'll be a private time. But I do want to ask you to come up, to kneel if you feel led, and instead of spilling out your requests, to take time to listen. And we also have several folks, myself included, that are going to be up here, and we're available to pray for you. So once again, you're not speaking, you're just listening. We just want to pray over you in these moments because I believe the Holy Spirit is here. I believe that there's a sense of hopelessness and heaviness in this room. I think people are carrying lots and lots of weights, and this is the place to lay it. This is the place to know it. You know, there's no pressure here. You can remain seated and listen to the music, but I invite you to come as you feel led. I invite you to come, and if you would like to be prayed for, you can just lift your hand like that. Like I said, we have several folks that will come up and pray. If you just want to listen, that's okay too. So I invite you, we're going to listen to this song. Come forward as you feel led and listen to what the Lord is saying in your whirlwind right now.
Oh, love that will not let me go. I rest my weary soul in thee. I give thee back the life I owe, that in thine ocean's depths its flow may richer, fuller be. My life is not my own, it's yours. My life is not my own, it's yours. O light that follows all my way, I yield my flickering torch to thee. My heart restores its borrowed ray, that in thy sunshine's place its day may brighter, fairer be. So light a fire in my heart, and I'll burn for you. So light a fire in my heart, I'll burn for you. Oh, joy. seeks me through the pain. I cannot close my heart to thee. I trace the rainbow through the rain and feel the promise is not in vain. That morn shall tearless be. So anoint me with joy, and joyful I will be. So anoint me with joy, and joyful I will be. O cross that's lifting up my head, I dare not ask to fly from thee. I lay in dust like glory dead, and from the ground there blossoms red. Life that shall endless be, and we will sing, holy, holy is the King of Kings. And we will sing, holy, holy is the King of Kings. And we will sing, holy, holy is the King of Kings. And we will sing, holy, holy is the King of Kings. Oh, love that will not let me go, I rest my weary soul in thee. I give thee back the life I owe, that in thy ocean depths its flow may richer, fuller be. My life is not my own, it's yours. My life not my own, it's yours.